You may be turning in John chapter 12. And excuse me again, I'm still wrong. John 14. I'll catch up with where I'm at in just a moment. John 14, and we'll be looking at John 14:6 here in a moment, but I do want to make a public service announcement because we do have many, many people here who are guests and maybe unfamiliar with our facilities and so forth. I want you to be aware that if you need a restroom, you can actually go out this aisle and go through either of those doors, and there's restrooms to the right there. Or you can go out this door, or you can go out this door, and you can circle back around, and there's some restrooms directly behind the sanctuary. If those don't meet your needs, you're welcome to go on past there. There's some more on the right, and you can also go around the dog leg there and around back through the welcome center, and there's some more restrooms. So, and just so you know, you have many, many options. Now, sadly, as much as that's humorous in one sense, isn't that sometimes the way we think about Jesus Christ, that he's an option? And we just search out and see if he fits our immediate need, if he has the plushness that we desire, if he's going to be what we want at the time period that we so-called want it. Well, when we look at the text today, we're going to see that Jesus doesn't define himself that way by any means. And so, therefore, we cannot define him that way as well. We're actually finishing up our series with this passage. Our series has been The Walking Impossible. And The Walking Impossible, we've walked through the story of Lazarus and what has taken place there, all the way through the last mention of Lazarus, and then after that, we have now jumped to where we're going to end up today. Now, here's the thing for us to understand. Every single person in here, you're either the walking impossible or you're the walking dead. There is no in between. So you're either the walking dead or the walking impossible. And when Jesus begins to share what he's sharing here, he's drawing that line in an even a more distinct way. And so the passage, or today as we look at John 14:6, we're looking at the title there being the death, the cross, and the resurrection. And in this passage, he declares a lot of truth. And again, this is one of those passages that if y'all would allow me, I could probably preach for about 7-8 hours and I'd just be getting started. Now, I know you're probably not going to want to do that. You have some other plans today. But we are going to try to at least hone in on the heart of some of this truth that's in this passage. And so we're going to look at that, and if you would, you can rise with me as we read John chapter 14, verse 6. Jesus said to him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." You may be seated. So just like I was noting the idea that you have many ways that you could go to the bathroom, so you don't have many ways that you can access heaven or that you can access the Father. Jesus is actually declaring here that there is only one way. Now here's the problem. We note that. We acknowledge that. We who have been in church for any length of time, we who have, again, been around the language and the lingo and so forth, we accept that in one sense. We would say that. But the question that I want us to begin to ponder as we work through this text is, do we live that? Does our life testify to that? Do we actually orient ourselves in the way that this would be noted as such? This passage is actually one of my favorite passages because I use it quite often. I use it primarily when I'm dealing with somebody who is an unbeliever and has a different religion. I've used this on the streets of Nashville. I've used it in the halls of Lamar, and I've used it in various places to try to point out to those who are testifying of a different religion, and yet they somehow will acknowledge Jesus, but they only acknowledge Jesus so far. They acknowledge him up to the point of being a wise teacher or a wise prophet or one that you can kind of listen to. However, he's not the Son of God. And so I've used this passage many times. I always just come back and ask the same question. It's the same question I want to ask you. And basically it's this. Who defines who Jesus is? Your understanding or your perception or Jesus himself? Because, see, that begins to change everything, doesn't it? So if we come back and look at this and it says, I am the way and the truth and the life, we can take these collectively, and they certainly have great meaning, but we can also take them individually and look at them each part, each piece. It's almost like putting a puzzle together and seeing even greater and greater depths of reality and truth. And so the point that happens often when I've interacted, particularly with Muslims and stuff, is that they've actually testified to the fact that, oh yes, they understand who Jesus is and who we claim him to be. They just don't go that far. They talk about him being a wise man. And I've interacted with one here not too long ago, and I was sharing with him, and I said, so you know he's a wise man. He's a prophet, right? And they were like, yes. I said, so who is wiser, the prophet or you? He says, oh, the prophet. And I said, so when the prophet says this, what do you do with that? But see, it's real easy for us to kind of go, yeah, those crazy Muslims, right? Well, I mean, here's something I actually read this morning. It was written from a young lady, and she actually had an article in an online magazine, and she was testifying to the fact how glad she was that she had finally walked away from an ultra-conservative fundamentalist church. And now that she was glad to be an atheist. She says here in her closing remarks, she says, leaving church behind is a forever decision for me. I never think about looking back or seeking a new religious path to follow. Without the confines of a church and a Bible to answer to, I've felt more free to explore the world through the lenses that resonate with me. Like history, literature, travel, psychology, and philosophy. Though I always felt church wanted to narrow my mind to a single set of beliefs, it mostly served as a cautionary tale, and for that I am eternally grateful. And again, we might shake our heads, those crazy atheists. However, I would begin to propose that often we live no different than they. We just won't say it. But we say it in every aspect of our life. So when Jesus makes this declaration and he says, I am the way. I am the way. It's not some way that you want to orient yourself to and then navigate and get to eventually somehow to Jesus Christ. And then therefore access God upon your own terms and your own timing. It's a declarative statement. It's a line of demarcation. It's set right there. And the reality is as he's saying this actually to the disciples, and he's helping them to understand the need of what they've got ingrained, he's letting them know, you're going to have to choose. And everything we do in our life, everything that we do is displaying that choice. It's not that we come forward when we're a child, or we respond again when we're in a revival meeting or something. All of those are the point of salvation that is enacted by God's grace upon us. However, if we're not continuing to live that truth out, then there's no way that we even know that that truth took place then. When he says, I am the way, he is actually indicating that much like he says in his other I am statements, I am the door. There is no entry without him. And it's not that you know of the way. It's that you know the way and that the way knows you. So these become imperative truths for us to take in and for us to understand. So when it says that I am the way, he is actually making a declaration also to his very divinity, to the fullness of who he is, the Son of God. That he has always been. This is how John notes in the beginning that he was the Word, and the Word was the living Word of God, and therefore it had always been. It was eternal. And so when he speaks this, again, he's defining something for them, and he's defining something for us. What way are you going? What way are you using to access God the Father? Is it church? Is it religious endeavors of some other kind? Is it something that, again, that you show up on Easter and dress up and then go home and forget about everything until maybe Christmas or Easter again? And you take the way and say, well, way, wait over there and I'll get to you next time. Because sadly, often that's the way we react. We acknowledge the reality of it. We assent to it mentally. We even begin to move toward it within our hearts, and yet we don't let it resonate and begin to orient and transform everything about us. And if it's not orienting and transforming everything about us, then I think they call that a farce, don't they? Because this is what he's actually warning them of. He's actually declaring a truth to the disciples as he's marching toward the cross, which is going to rock their world. This is not the Messiah they had envisioned. Guess what? He's not the Messiah that often we like to envision. All of a sudden, this one who could do all things is going to hang on a cross and die in that manner. Well, that seems foolish. Paul writes later in Corinthians, that's the problem. The world thinks it's foolish. And so he's actually preparing them to let them know, you're going to have to make a decision. Do you really, really believe I am the definitive article, the way, not a way? Not a way that you can manipulate and use to your own means. Not a way to make your life comfy and nice and again, just slap a little Jesus sticker on your car and you're good. The way. Definitive. And the article and definitive in your life. Well, he says also that he is the truth. The truth. So not only is he speaking in that term of the way, he's also declaring that there is no other truth other than him. I mean, there's not other truth out there other than him. The only reason science can even discover a truth is because Christ has already declared it, and therefore it is. And all they have done is discovered it. So again, it's kind of like if Columbus says that he ends up hitting his boat over here in North America and says, look what I have done. You didn't do anything but discover what was already there. And there's no difference in the way that we approach truth. Often we come back and we go, oh wow, I've got this great truth. Well, guess what? It's not great. It was already there. It was something that Christ himself had already declared and had made in real time. For you now to discover. And so then when he orients this around and declares this as well, he says that I am the truth. There is no other truth worth knowing. No scientific formulas. Great. Understand the mechanics of things. Great. No chemistry in and out. Wonderful. Guess what? That truth will not get you the way. It will not get you this truth. And it will not get you the life that is promised as well. So it's not to negate those things, but it is to put them in their proper perspective. The only truth that matters is Jesus Christ. Period. And if you don't start with that foundation, everything else you pile on won't stand because it's on true sinking sand. I am the way. Another way to come back and think of the way is that the way is death. This is displayed in what he does. The truth is the cross. So as much as Jesus shows us that the way is death, because he's going to take on our sin, and therefore that the truth is the cross, and he's going to do it upon the cross, which seems foolish, he also, though, in the life, testifies to the resurrection. The promise. See, because here's what our world does. Just like this young lady who wrote this article, just like other religious endeavors will try to take Christ and tweak him so he's not so abrasive. Because, you know, it's really kind of odd when somebody starts saying, hey, eat of my flesh and drink of my blood. That rubs people wrong. And when he all of a sudden starts talking about dying and picking up your cross and therefore wholesaling, getting rid of your previous life and selling everything for the pearl of great price and pursuing him and nothing but, that just seems a little bit too radical. So we like to tone that down a little bit. And yet this is what he's doing here as he says that he is the life. In fact, there is no life to live other than Jesus Christ. Remember how we started, you're either walking dead or walking impossible. And if you don't have Christ, you're just dead and you don't know it yet. But there's going to come a day when it will be stamped in eternity and there's no opportunity again to accept the reality of what he states here, that he is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So the resurrection, the life, we see this as he comes forth, and what we know is, and we're here to celebrate in this Easter time, we see this. So what is that? I am the way, the truth, and the life. Again, it's that line. If you're going to believe this, it has to change everything. And if you believe this and it doesn't change everything, you don't believe it. That's the reality. Now, I'll admit I've used this many times with Muslims, Hindus, and various people, and often I have never seen somebody fall out and go, oh, yes, absolutely. However, I love to leave them hanging with the question because I don't have to contend with it. They need to. And I don't have to contend with the question for yourself. You have to. You have to contend with it. I'm not asking if you can recognize the fact that he is the way, the truth, and the life. I mean, we understand that a little bit anyway, right? Because whether you believe in a fact or not, it's still a fact. Whether you believe 2 plus 2 is 2, it's 2 plus 2 is 4. It's 4, right? It doesn't matter. So it's not about whether you even believe it or accept it. The reality is still in place. Well, Jesus Christ is defining this as well. There's a reality in place here. And your decision of how you handle it will not change that reality. But that reality will change everything about you if you begin to see it as the truth that it is. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Last week we had talked about that you can't segment Christ and the Father. They're one and the same. You can't segment them. And he's saying here in that same sense, you can't have God without coming through me. So you can be as religious as you want. You can pray all you care to. You can acknowledge a great God who even created the heavens and the earth. And yet even that itself is not salvation. You can even, again, give of yourself and serve in various capacities. You can attend church regularly. But in that, again, that's not salvation. Salvation is coming through the way that Jesus Christ has testified that we must come, through him, and through the process of death, to be the walking dead and finally wake up and realize I'm dead and I need life. To come through the avenue of the truth, that again, to accept the reality that is present, that even though you have not wanted to orient your life to it, it's there. And now you will decide to begin to live out of that truth. And that you will have the life, that this resurrection, that this moment in time that has been marked, that it is real and it changes everything. The resurrection means that I can no longer freely live how I have lived before. I have to be different. And if I'm not, then I'm still the walking dead. And that I can't get to God and I can't get to heaven. I can't stop the flames of hell unless I come through the way, the truth, and the life. I have no other choice. So, again, to sum it up for you, to make it real simple, I don't know where you are. I don't know where you are in your personal life. I don't know what you did when you were a kid, and I don't know what you've done as you're an adult. I don't know. But I do know someone who does. And you do too. And the reality is, again, here it is, clear. There's a line. And you can acknowledge the reality and say, oh yes, there's a Jesus. Oh yes, there's a resurrection. Oh yes, these are things that took place in history. However, they don't have anything to do with my life. Or you can even be so bold to say, you know, no, I don't believe it ever happened. I believe it's all fairy tales. And you know what? It has nothing to do with my life. What's the difference? None. Or you can look at it and you can begin to see, how is it that I could understand that God the Father would send His only begotten Son to save me? Not the world, you. Because see, if there was nobody else sitting here, if there was nobody else upon this earth, Jesus would have still come. He would have done it for you. Because you're His creation, He loves you, He cares. And so now this reality of God sending His own Son to die and bear the sins that I put upon Him, and then that He would die that death and take that righteousness that was His to begin with and then be willing to transfer it to me so that I don't have to bear that penalty and therefore I can live in new life. And that I could look at all of this transaction that has been displayed throughout the wholeness of what Easter is, and therefore the reality of the death, burial, and resurrection, and say, you know, yeah, I get it, but that shouldn't change anything about me, should it? Well, if you get it, it should change everything about you. So the only question that you really have to begin to let God assess in your own heart through the Holy Spirit is, where's the transformational change? And if it's not present, and there's that line, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You have a choice. You can walk out of here like you've done maybe on many other Easters, and you can go hunt eggs. And keep your eternity solidified in the place you don't want to keep it. Or today you can step across that line. But wait a second, believers. We're not off the hook either. Just because you stepped across that line doesn't mean that sometimes you don't like to come back over here and play on the other side. When are we, I included, we as believers, a church, a corporate body of believers, going to decide there's no more going back across. There's no more playing in that land. It's time that we're going to be serious, and we want God to break us. And we want to be totally transformed. We are sick of the sin that plagues us. And we want it out. Well, it starts with, again, going right back to that same way, truth, life, and acknowledging our desperate need of it. So today we can end. You've partaken of the Lord's Supper. You've seen displayed through that ordinance the reality of the death, burial, and resurrection, the reality of that He has died and given of Himself, that His body was crushed, that He bled His body dry for us. And you can begin to look at the way, the truth, and the life and decide that it's not transformational. It's your choice. But I beg of you, today there's a promise, new life, and he will give it.